As a member of our diocesan staff, I bring you greetings from your friends across this diocese, and particularly from the deacons, who are the group that has a big heart for the kinds of ministries which this community engages with in the world around you. And I thank you for that. You are a diaconal parish. A few years ago, after extricating myself from what I euphemistically referred to as my personal recession, I managed finally to cobble together a gift for my dear alma mater of $500. Well, let me tell you, all of a sudden, I was somebody. I had attained the dizzying heights of membership in the Provost's Circle, or maybe it was the Junior Fellows Club. I got a long-distance phone call to thank me for my gift, and I began receiving numerous invitations to exclusive spiffy events with illustrious speakers. And of course, my name was to be listed for all to see in the annual giving magazine. And for the first time in 18 years, Trinity College Toronto finally got my title correct. I didn't even have to ask. But you know what? All that fawning over $500. And I just wished that Trinity College understood that the $100 I used to send them posed an actual hardship to me. I mean, it was in every way possible a more generous, more costly gift. So you may have guessed by now, if you've been told that once again, this is the third time, but who's counting? Your stewardship committee has invited me to focus with you on the topic of stewardship. Lorraine, I'm running out of ideas. But I want to do so in a way that draws as clear a distinction as possible between stewardship as the church practices it, or at least as we're called to practice it, and the kind of secular fundraising that surrounds us on every side. So this past year, we've been focusing on the Gospel of Matthew. Now, I wonder if you have noticed how frequently in Matthew, Jesus sets his teaching over against the received wisdom. So you have heard it said X, says Jesus, but I say to you Y, which is usually X plus 3, right? Or you've heard this, it shall not be so amongst you. It may be the world, the way the world functions, not you, not you. And in this regard, I look at the ways that the organizations around us raise money, and these words of Jesus ring in my ears, but it is not to be so amongst you. That is not how you are to raise money. That is not how you are to give it. Now, I can get quite wound up on this subject. I might have one more in me, Lorraine. But let me choose just a very few examples of what I mean. I think the problem may begin with our fundamental attitude to the things, or the potential things, and that's all money is. Like a $20 bill is nothing, it's stored potential, right? The real problem is with our fundamental attitude to the things that in our possession. We have confused possession with ownership. In a Christian view, everything we have is on loan to us. And I mean everything, including what we have earned, including what we have bought. Just because we happened to win the cradle lottery when we were born, or the genetic lottery, doesn't mean that we are any more worthy than anybody else of shelter, food, happiness, or opportunities. When you think of all that you have, your mind, your health, your strength, your education, and even the money that all these things together have helped you to fetch, when you think of these things as a gift, as a sacred trust from God to be employed for the sake of all that God loves, then you begin to look at your money and your giving differently. See, it's really a misnomer, and I'm sorry I didn't look over your materials ahead of time. It's a misnomer to call us donors. We are stewards on behalf of the real owner, who is God. So, by way of comparison, as an analog, think of the financial scandals that have rocked our community over the decades. Everybody from Bernie Madoff to Greg Martel, right? In almost every case, what went wrong was that a steward of investors' contributions began acting like the owner. We're God's stewards. Now here's a second fundamental point of distinction. In most cases, when we make a gift to charity, we're at arm's length from that organization, right? I mean, whether it's the Victoria Hospital Foundation, or Trinity College Toronto, or the St. John's Food Bank, I am not personally an employee, a member, or even a user of any of these organizations. I am I, and they are they. But you see, by contrast, in the church, there is no we and they. When we make a gift to the church, in a very real sense, we're making a gift to ourselves so that we can do the work that God has called us to do. Watch the language in church stewardship brochures carefully and compare it to other charitable solicitations that you receive. I mean, you've got to be on somebody's mailing list, right? The church should be using language like our plans and our givings rather than you and your gift to the church. Nothing irritates me more than hearing people say, well, there you go, there's the church asking us for money again. As if the church were something other than us. Thirdly, the dreaded issue of tithing. Now, as you likely know, the practice of tithing is rooted in the Hebrew scriptures. Here's the point. The people were to bring not just a tenth, but the first tenth of their produce as an offering to God. Think about it. To bring the first fruits had to be a tremendous act of trust. I mean, what if 3 days after that the crop failed? What if after the early rains there were, as has been the case here, no rains at all? Then you would already have given away your only hope of survival. So, charitable giving in the Hebrew scriptures always carried with it this element of trust and just being so darned excited, like, wow, would you look at that? That little seed turned into an ear of corn just gratitude and amazement. Now, once we have firmly in mind that Christian giving is less about an amount than it is about gratitude and trust, then we can deal quite handily with the matter of tithing. Now, there are many denominations, and there are still plenty of Anglicans who hold out this principle of tithing as the standard for giving, get this, to the church. But some have opted for what they call proportional giving. 10% of gross or of net is, like too much, but I could give one half of 1%, or 5%, or 6%. I prefer a standard of generosity. You see, Bill Gates or Elon Musk, they probably wouldn't even miss 10%. Of their annual income. Family making $40,000 per year? Most certainly would. I get it. Generosity is a messy standard, but it is much more just. For myself, I ask this: is my gift that I share with the church generous enough that I miss it? Is it generous enough that I've had to make a choice between this and something else I might have desired? That's how I know if my gift has been costly enough to me. Now, those of you who still remember that I began by promising to distinguish between secular fundraising and Christian stewardship, maybe wondering if I have wandered off topic, since you'd be hard-pressed to find a secular agency asking for a tithe of your income. But I haven't, not really. Because as soon as generosity is the standard for giving, the size of the gift becomes secondary, which is not how secular fundraisers see things. Typically, in a fundraising campaign, you'll hire a development officer, and they try and do this to the church too when you hire one. You gotta nip at their heels, you do. Typically, a development officer slots donors into particular categories, right, which are dependent upon the size of your gift. Now, if you don't believe me, just look at the back of your program at the symphony or the opera, right? And by the way, clergy, that's a great place to go trawling for people who can help you out. I'm not kidding. They gave what to the symphony? And give us 10,000, why, you can be a pillar of the church. Give us 100 and you can be a church mouse. Surely you'd rather be a pillar than a church mouse, right? So we guilt people into things. It's lovely. Now, this brings us right to the border of the whole issue of, and the church struggles with this, the whole issue of recognition and what is sometimes called direct giving. Secular fundraisers are really pretty cynical about human nature. And sadly, a lot of studies prove their cynicism to be well-founded. But it's not to be so amongst us, right? They seem to believe that you have to motivate givers. You have to reward donors in some way. I mean, they can scarcely imagine that somebody would give something for nothing. And we see it all the time. At least three times this fall, I've got enough return address stickers to last me to the second coming, right? Offer to me tit for tat in hopes that I will support some wildlife fund, usually. Trinity College, of course, was banking on the fact that I couldn't wait to see my name in the list of people who gave a gift over $499, and that I will pant after the prospect of graduating to the Chancellor's Circle or some other. In the world of secular fundraising, it's all about naming opportunities. Give us enough, and you know, we'll name the velodrome after you for 3 years. After which, of course, which means that we're doing your advertising for you. That's what naming opportunities do. They advertise for you. Do you see what that means, though? Set that against what you understand of Christian stewardship. You're not giving at all. You're buying something. Not so long ago, at my local country grocer, I'm kind of shifting into the direct giving question here. My local country grocer, I was being enticed to support wounded warriors. For a rather small gift, I would receive a book of coupons. I asked the young veteran who was taking care of the table if I could just give $150, no coupons in return. His forms did not allow for such a gift. Now, I made the gift anyway because I believe in their work. I don't need a present for supporting it. Or in a similar vein, just this week, my beloved cathedral down the road inveigled me into purchasing tickets for a 50-50 draw. So the winner of the draw gets 50% of the total ticket sales, and then the church gets the other 50. Well, I thought about this for a bit, and I bought $20 worth of tickets just as a show of support. And then I made a direct gift to the cathedral of $500. Why? Because all the 500 and not just half of it will go to the church, and it's the church I care about. Also, such a gift qualifies, as a raffle ticket does not, as a charitable gift in the eyes of Revenue Canada. I'm going to get back almost 50% of my gift guaranteed in tax credits, whether I win the raffle or not. As Christians, we need to hold firm to our commitment to give without self-interest. It's just not to be so amongst us. We give to give, not to receive. And this, despite what I just said, does include tax considerations. It heartens me that in Canada, studies show that the prospect of tax relief is not, in fact, the primary motivator for charitable giving. Thankfully, in this country, people give primarily because they believe in the cause to which they are giving. The tax relief is a bonus. Okay, so all I'm saying is this. As Christians, we see charitable giving differently. It's a matter of stewardship, of exercising our role as curators of what God has entrusted to us for just a short time. And that changes everything. None of it is ours, nor have we earned it. Rather, our calling is to share freely of all that has fallen into our hands for the sake of those whose hands are empty. Amen.